The franchise tag deadline is tomorrow, and still no long-term deal between Dak and the Cowboys. Without a deal done by 4 p.m. Eastern, the Cowboys will likely use the franchise tag on Prescott for the second straight year at a cost of $37.7 million. Stephen A., how long will Dak remain a Cowboy, knowing all that we know?
I hope I'm wrong. Let me say that. But I'd have to venture to guess and say one more year. There does come a point in time where you're looking at somebody that you work for and you feel so disrespected that you're like, the hell with this person. I want to go someplace else where I'm appreciated, where I'm valued, where I don't feel, even though you know in your heart of hearts in the world of professional sports, there's always an obligation to have to prove something and your mettle is tested. And you've got to show up and show out because you've always got to validate your very own existence. And you understand that there does come a point in time where you look at certain people and it's like, okay, this is what I've done. And you're holding me to a standard that's inconsistent with the standard that you hold other people to. And you don't like it. You don't appreciate it. And you don't want to have anything to do with them anymore. Now, in a figurative sense, that could be the case with Dak Prescott. Now, he's going to go on the field and perform. He's not going to let down his teammates. He's not going to give less than 100% effort. But there is something to be said about being enthusiastic about your job. And when that is not there, that does not exist, bad things eventually are going to happen in some capacity. There's just no way to escape it. And I think that's the case with Dak Prescott, Max. I think it's one of those situations where, especially if he's franchised, it's over. I don't think, you know, they still have until July to sign him to a long-term deal. And I'm not ruling out the possibility. I'm not saying definitively it won't happen. But if I had to bet my money, if you don't reach a long-term agreement with him sooner than later, Dak Prescott going to tell Jerry Jones and the Dallas Cowboys to kick rocks after next season. I'm moving on. I definitely think that's a possibility.
I think they're getting a long-term deal done. And I think it might be very, very soon, like maybe before the franchise deadline, and I'll tell you why. Yeah. The NFL is divided into two different kinds of teams, period. The haves and the have-nots. And unlike other sports, it's not about big market, small market, anything like that. It's about the teams with quarterbacks and the teams without them, period. KC has a quarterback. Green Bay has a quarterback. Tampa has a quarterback. Seattle has a quarterback for now. Washington doesn't have a quarterback. Neither New York team. They're hoping they have one. They don't know. The haves and the have-nots. And when you have a quarterback, you're halfway there already. Dallas has a quarterback. Now, they may not value him the way Kansas City or Green Bay or Tampa values their guys. They shouldn't yet because he's not on that level yet. But he's very good, and maybe he's trending toward there. And the bottom line is they've now reached the deadline. Either you're going to remain a team with a quarterback or you're going to be like the bottom feeders looking for one. And I can't believe that Jerry Jones, having been beaten in the negotiation, because Stephen A., this franchise tag, you can't prorate it, amortize it over time.
37 now, it's going to be 50 million next year.
Yeah. So that's why does he want more years? He wants it to be less of a cap hit, to spread it out more years. Then you redo the deal and keep kicking the can down the road. But Jerry Jones has backed himself into this situation, and he is going to have to admit, I got beat in the negotiation. I think his ego can handle it. He has said on the record, I mentioned this earlier, every single one of the best deals he ever made in his career, he overpaid. Mm-hmm. But he's admitting, but those were the best deals. So I'm saying he's going to do it, Stephen A., because the moment he admits he lost, he wins. He gets his quarterback.
I got to confess to you, Max Kellerman, on a personal level, man, I've been very uncomfortable having this conversation about Dak Prescott for as long as we've been having it. Because as much as I love to troll Cowboy fans, I'm dead serious when I say I have nothing against the Cowboys. It's the fans. The Dallas Cowboy fans really are disgusting and nauseating to me. I really don't like them. You understand what I'm saying? Old, young, black, white, I don't give a damn who they are. I've never met a Cowboy fan I actually like. I really don't. I really mean I can't stand them.
I don't mean to sound anti-Cowboy, but some of your best friends are Cowboys fans.
You could say that, yeah, and I don't like them. When the subject of the Cowboys come up, I don't return their phone calls. I don't talk to them. The only person that I can tolerate is Michael Irvin, because, damn it, you won Super Bowls with him. You have every right to be the cheerleader that you are because you you're the playmaker. You're Michael Irvin. He's the lone exception. But the average Joe American citizen out here who's a Cowboy fan, I find them to be utterly disgusting when it comes to the subject of the Cowboys. Male and female. Fine, ugly, it don't matter. I don't give a damn who you are. If you're a Cowboy fan, when it comes to
usually
about
fine,
I don't like
excuses
you.
It.
That's
but
right.
In this case, no.
I don't like him. But I'll tell you this. When it comes to Jerry Jones, here's the part that really bothers me. Max Kellerman, I gotta confess to you, I genuinely like the man. I had the pleasure of meeting him a few years ago. We talked when we was doing something for Up Fronts with ESPN. We talked again at the Super Bowl part. I mean, Jerry Jones is a fascinating guy. He's great to talk to. He actually gave me a birthday wish. He's my Libra brother. You know what I'm saying? He's October 13th. I'm October 14th. I'm very, very, very fond of this man. And I actually, if he were to end up winning, it would just sicken me to my stomach because of the Dallas Cowboy fans I have to deal with. But him, I would actually be happy for him. But what bothers me is when I have to talk about him with Dak Prescott, because I truly, truly believe if this were Tony Romo, you'd have had this done already. And I didn't like his position. You know how he disappeared and went AWOL when the whole social justice movement came about, because I'm like, you front and center then, where the hell are you now? And then the Dak Prescott thing, you know what, you taking these positions, but you didn't do it with Tony Romo. It really bothered me because I really, really like him.
I have a question. Let's,
but it bothers me.
Let's real talk, as the kids say. When you bring that up, I always think, does race have something to do with it, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's one thing to pay black players. Mm-hmm. It's another thing to pay African-American quarterbacks or coaches, because that's who gets the airtime. That's who represents the team. That's who the leader is, mm-hmm. right? That's why there was always bars set against black quarterbacks, really. How much of it do you think is that? And I know it's unknowable how much race plays into it. Mm-hmm. And how much of it is just that in Tony Romo's case, the dude had next-level charisma? Like, when you bring up Romo, it's not simply that he's some quarterback. It's that he's so charismatic, he gets $17 million a year to talk on TV.
Let me answer that quickly, because we got to go. Jerry Jones from Arkansas. And Jerry Jones, Southern roots, he's a billionaire, all of this other stuff. And I know people want to lean to that. And maybe there's some truth to it in terms of the level of control he likes to exercise. But I'm not going to be unfair to Jerry Jones. I know plenty of black players who swear by him and talk about the kind of man
everyone
that he
does.
Is
all the players
and how he's been supportive. And I know it's a pleasure and an honor to know him and to talk to him. I got nothing negative to say about Jerry Jones in that regard. What I would say about the Tony Romo thing, and Tony Romo's charisma is off the charts. You're absolutely right about that. My issue with Jerry Jones is, in the end, if you know you would do something for Tony Romo, with Dak Prescott, I don't know what the reason is, but I do know this. You have not been fair to this man. Because from the time that Dak Prescott walked through the door, maybe because he was succeeding Tony Romo, you haven't given him a fair shake. And I resent that. Because I don't think Dak is the kind of guy that deserves it. He's been a model citizen. He's been exemplary off the field to play. The only blemish on Dak Prescott's entire career thus far is him throwing a little gathering at the start of COVID-19. That's
all
about
I'm saying
it.
Is it could confuse the situation because he's following Romo as opposed to some other quarterback.
Exactly. And I'm going to leave it at that, because I'm not going to accuse Jerry Jones of something like that. I just know that he likes his power and he likes the control. But Jerry Jones has been a good man to too many black folks that I know of for me to sit up there and say something like that about him. I will not do that to him. I just wish that he was fairer to Dak Prescott than he has been.
All right, well, we'll see what happens. 29 hours and counting until that franchise tag deadline.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, The majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes. So they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome. So you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's LECTRICEbikes.com.
1 month after winning his seventh Super Bowl, Tom Brady and the Bucks are working on a contract extension, very well deserved. Our Adam Schefter saying the team and Brady have, quote, good momentum toward a contract extension. Brady currently has one more year left on a two-year, $50 million contract he signed with Tampa Bay last March. Max, are you confident that Brady will win another Super Bowl with the Bucks?
No, I can't say confident. I take confident to mean it's better than 50-50. I think Tom Brady has a damn good shot, year in and year out, to win a Super Bowl with the Bucs, provided he stays at the level he's on, give or take. And as time goes on, even Tom Brady, I saw this happen with Bernard Hopkins, who I thought was fighting father time to a draw. Even he eventually, at the age of 50, you know, was no longer the same. So he'll have a shot every year, you know, if he's more or less on this level on this team. They are loaded. But I wouldn't pick him against the field. That's tough. And you know how lucky you have to get, how many breaks you have to get along the way to win a Super Bowl? Like, that's what's so amazing about how many Super Bowls Brady has won. You think about Patrick Mahomes this year, best quarterback I've ever seen. I thought he was the most spectacular player in the Super Bowl, honestly, even with those bad numbers, running for his life and everything. Mahomes had to get lucky even to win the one Super Bowl, you know, right? Because if Garoppolo hits Sanders, he doesn't even win the one. And then he got unlucky the next year, this past season, when both starting tackles went down to injury. And with that makeshift offensive line, he was pressured on over half his snaps. No, there's really never a team that you would say is not just the odds-on favorite, but the favorite against the field. Even Kansas City last year, I thought, hey, you know what, they're the favorite against the field. No, not really. Too many things have to go right. So if Brady sticks around for 4 or 5 years at this level, then I would say, yeah, probably at that point, better than 50-50, he wins one. But if we're really saying, let's take this at two-year intervals for Brady, who's 43 now, I can't say it's a better than 50-50 proposition that he wins yet another one. Too many things have to go right.
Well, I would say, how are we going to sit up there and bet against it? I'd say it's a better than 50-50 proposition. Why would I not say that? Let's scour the NFC. When we look at the Los Angeles Rams, how confident are you about Matthew Stafford or Jimmy Garoppolo or Russell Wilson in Seattle, considering what's been going on there with Pete Carroll and his staff with Russell Wilson? Or Matt LaFleur's in Green Bay. Am I supposed to jump up and celebrate and think there's going to be a parade near Lambeau Field because of him? Sorry, I don't feel that way. Chicago Bears still don't have a quarterback, okay? We understand all of that, okay? The Dallas Cowboys, all of a sudden, I'm supposed to believe that Dak Prescott's going to come back from the broken ankle and a broken foot, whatever the hell it is. Or how about both? Because it looked nasty. That was a nasty-looking injury there. Am I supposed to believe that the Philadelphia Eagles are going to resurrect themselves with Jalen Hurts? How about Danny Dimes with the New York Giants? How about the Washington football team that not only doesn't have a quarterback, but not even a name? A matter of fact, their quarterback is Heineke. Is that what it is? Heineke, last time I heard, that was a muffler. Okay? I mean, what am I supposed to think there? Okay? So we got the NFC there. And then the AFC, of course, Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs are going to come back, try to make amends for what happened, but they got beat down. All right? Then I look at the Pittsburgh Steelers, or Ben Roethlisberger's coming back. I'm happy about that. But you know how you feel about that. We look at Lamar Jackson. Is he going to learn how to throw the football better? We know what an incredible athlete he is. Is Joe Burrow ready in Cincinnati? Is Baker Mayfield ready in Cleveland? Josh Allen in Buffalo, I like it. Tua Tagovailoa in Miami, I like it. But we ain't looking at none of them and thinking that they're going to get past Kansas City. And so when you look at it from that perspective, all right, now we go back to the NFC and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers specifically. I don't think Antonio Brown's going anywhere. I don't think Rob Gronkowski's going anywhere. I don't think Cameron Brate's going anywhere. I don't think that Chris Godwin is going anywhere. I don't think Mike Evans is going anywhere. Oh, by the way, O.J. Howard's probably coming back. And oh, by the way, that defense is still going to be in there, all right? And then Bruce Arians is still there. Byron Leftwich is still there. Todd Bowles is still there because I didn't see him get a head coaching job this offseason. Why should I not believe in Tampa Bay? coming back now that, excuse me, you're playing with house money, you're the Super Bowl champions, you got that pressure off your shoulders, you did what you came there to do, and now this is what the deal is. I don't see any issues with it whatsoever. I can sit up there and see Tampa Bay winning another Super Bowl in the next 2 years as long as Brady is still there.
You make a good case for every other team seems to have warts of one kind or another in the NFC, right? Mm-hmm. So you make a good case for them being the odds-on favorites.
Sure.
But that's different than them being the favorites against the field. And when you look at, like, look at some of these teams. Green Bay, for example, came this close, right? And they had drafted a quarterback in the first round. They're not going to draft a quarterback in the first round now. Mm-hmm. And this is the first year Rodgers really figured it out with LaFleur. Mm-hmm. So now they have their entire complement of draft picks just to help Aaron Rodgers in the defense. And they were that close already with a blunder by LaFleur. Never going to happen again. I think you have to look at Green Bay. I think you have to look at ascending teams like Arizona. I think you know, what if Kyler Murray takes the next jump because he already improved and becomes an elite quarterback? Could easily happen. Look, they're kind of stacked. I think you have to look at the 49ers, who were in the Super Bowl the previous year with Garoppolo, who, by the way, wins at least twice as much as he loses, including in the playoffs. I think there are plenty of teams who could beat Tampa on any given Sunday in the playoffs, and it just takes one loss, season over. I can't say better than 50-50 to win a Super Bowl in the next 2 years.
Well, guess what? Tom Brady is the first player to win an NFL championship in three different decades. The next decade, not for a while, but I guess you can never really say never when it comes to Tom Brady.
Hey, hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Wow, so many amazing moments with women leading the way, and I know we are in for so many more. Everyone, it is Women's History Month, specifically today. It is International Women's Day. So we thought of no one better than to help us celebrate than a very, very important, powerful woman in the world of sports. We have the Lakers CEO and governor, Jeannie Buss, joining us here on First Take. Oh.
And to chip off the old block.
She's going to be with us in just a second. She's the first female owner of an NBA championship team. So this is very important. Someone we really are excited to have here with us. And guys, we have a lot to get to with Jeannie Buss coming up. She's joining us in just a minute,
You know what? What I could say about Jeannie Buss, and okay. I'm interested in talking to her about it, Stephen A. And Charlie, is, you understand, she had the handcuffs on when she first took over the team.
Yes.
Because her father, the late, great Dr. Jerry Buss, the greatest owner by far in the history of American team sports, he took over the Lakers. They had 6 championships. You blink, they have 17. His basically dying wish is that they kept the family together through the Lakers. And so Jeannie was, you know, respectful as a family member and kept her brother on for 4 years while Lakers fans were saying, have a new regime, have a new regime. But the moment she took the cuffs off, 3 years later, they won the championship. Is she ready now?
She's ready. Here she
is.
Yes,
she is.
Lakers owner Jeannie Buss. Jeannie, how are you doing today? Happy International Women's Day. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you for taking the day to celebrate women in sports. This is very exciting, very cool. Thank you.
Okay, so Gina, you obviously are very well aware. You're a very powerful woman, and obviously in your position, it means a lot of things. You're surrounded by men. It's a very male-dominated industry. So what is it like to be a woman in your position?
I think our industry is so competitive, it doesn't really matter what gender you are. Everybody's out to get everybody. We all want to win. So if they think that attacking me or getting at me because I'm a woman and I believe that I don't belong, then they're dead wrong. That's not how it is. But certainly, since I've been involved in this business over 30 years, I've seen a lot of significant change, and I think progress has been made for women in sports in all aspects, on the field, on the court, in the office, at the league level. It's exciting to see how much change has taken place in my lifetime.
Jeannie, what I find, first of all, is I'm honored and privileged to have you on the show. Thank you for being here. It's always wonderful to talk to you. And I got to tell you, you know, the men that are in the industry, in the NBA, anytime the name Jeannie Buss comes up, it's with reverence and deference to such a degree because of the phenomenal things that you've been able to accomplish and the relationships you've somehow cultivated throughout your illustrious career. There's so many positive things they point to about you, but when you look at yourself and what you've accomplished with the Los Angeles Lakers, leading the Los Angeles Lakers organization, being one of the governors in the NBA, if there's something that stands out about you, what do you believe that is? Because a lot of people say a lot of great things, but what do you believe it is about you?
I learned from my dad that you have to respect people. He was all about inclusion, bringing people together. He felt that the Lakers were an organization that made a city like Los Angeles that has a history of divisiveness, that we could all come together under the purple and gold flag. And, you know, that's how I look at it. A person in my position is to bring great, smart, talented people together and give them the opportunity, the platform to be the best that they can be.
Yeah, because, Jeannie, we can't just ascribe the success to Los Angeles. You know, the Clippers are in Los Angeles for a long time now. Zero championships with a bunch of good teams. But as I mentioned earlier, 3 years after you were kind of unfettered in your ownership of the team and making the decisions you wanted to make as opposed to simply respecting your father's wishes about the way he hoped it would work, 3 years later, you win a championship. A championship in 3 years. So how does that come together?
It's hard to win a championship. I mean, I am as surprised and pleased as everybody else. What I couldn't understand was the previous front office kind of strayed away from what Dr. Buss had made a successful formula. And so I just restored the legacy that my dad left and that he wanted me to protect. I like to say that, you know, my dad had his children, but the Lakers were his baby. And I just went back to the way he did things. And, you know, all the pieces come together. It's the players on the court. It's the coaches on the sidelines that take it over the hump. And I couldn't be more proud of the work that they did and the sacrifice they made to be in the bubble to finish out the season that started, you know, literally a calendar year. It was a full calendar year until from preseason until we were crowned champions.
Fair, you know, it's we got to be fair and be fair and give accolades where it's due. We can talk about the great players. We can talk about the great Magic Johnson. I got to give some love to Rob Pelinka and the job that he has done. Kobe used to tell me all the time about how much this man knew about basketball and what have you. But there is no denying the job that Rob Pelinka has done. With his stewardship over the franchise to some degree as well. Can you talk about him and what he's meant to the Lakers organization in his time there?
He is a thoughtful leader. He's somebody who knows the game, but he also knows the personalities. Given his background as not only a college basketball player, championship player, but also, his time as an agent and knowing, you know, how players think and, you know, how to put together personalities so that they all complement each other. He knows how to fill out a roster. He's a great leader. I enjoy working with him so much. You know, he's done a great job.
Jeannie, we've seen women take roles as officials in the NBA, also the NFL. We've seen them take assistant coaching positions. When do you think we're going to see the first female head coach? And also, as a woman, what do you want to see next in the world of sports?
You know, I was celebrated as the first female governor to, you know, win an NBA championship. My first reaction is, I hope I'm not the last. You know, certainly, like I said earlier, so much has changed in the 30 years that I've been in this business, and I don't see anything that would hold a woman back from being a coach of any male team. And I like to kind of share a thought that Billie Jean King, my friend and mentor, talks about, that how important it is to see women in a power position, that women, until people understand that women not only can lead women, but men as well, then we will finally have a female president of this country.
And we have a female vice president right now. Jeannie, it's been a pleasure. When I was in L.A. At the Lakers radio station, the ESPN L.A., it was a pleasure dealing with the Buss family. Your father, your brother, you. I mean, having dealt with owners of different teams, you guys were so easy to deal with, and you had every reason not to be. You were the powerful, best team and all this stuff. And you have a luxury tax bill you're facing coming up. This is not an international corporation, the Lakers, like many team owners. It's a vanity business or something. This is how the Buss family makes a living. This is your legacy for your children and everything, and yet you're about to be faced with a massive $100 million luxury tax bill. How do you weigh that against the Buss family's insane competitiveness and desire to put championship after championship team on the court for the city of L.A.?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult with the loss of revenue due to no ticket sales in the arena. You know, we are in a league that is dictated by a salary cap, a collective bargaining agreement. So we have to abide by all those rules. But, you know, the luxury tax is for teams that, you know, have championship aspirations. And certainly that is something that we want to keep the Lakers at the top of the conversation. And, you know, once LeBron James decided to join the Lakers, you know, the way he's playing, he doesn't seem like he's 36 years old. But when you have a player like LeBron James on your team, you got to go for it. You got to use that opportunity to win. So, you know, we'll manage the cap just like every other team in the league has to do. We play by the same rules.
Got to ask you, how much time left do you think LeBron James has? I mean, he looks like it's endless. It looks like he can keep on going and going and going, like a Duracell battery, for crying out loud. I got to ask you, have you received any kind of indication where it's just going to be a couple of years, he just wants to get a solid 20 seasons in? Or do you have this mentality that, you know, excuse me, he's giving you every indication he's going to play for years to come? What do you get from talking to LeBron James about his future?
Well, you know, it is like a really good match. We want him to stay around as long as he wants to stay around. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar played till he was 42. LeBron said something the other day about how he probably won't play when he's 46. So maybe somewhere between, you know, now and 46, so another 10 years, somewhere, you know, whatever he wants to do. We love having him. I have to say, he drafted a really good all-star team yesterday.
Yes, he did.
Watching the all-star game. He knows basketball. He's competitive. You know, it's just, we're having a lot of fun having him around. But the one thing that's missing are the fans.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jeannie, there's been some discussion about changing the league logo. Why do you think that Kobe Bryant should be the new face of the NBA logo?
I think Kobe Bryant should be the face of every sports league, every you know, the Olympics. I think that Kobe stood for everything that we aspire to in sports: hard work, perseverance, dedication, will, the, you know, the Mamba mentality. I think he would be an icon fitting for everything involved in sports.
Why do you feel, Jeannie, you mentioned it earlier, and I've heard you talk about being the steward of the team as though it's a public trust, the Lakers, even though it's privately owned. Having lived in L.A. for 6 years, that is, the Lakers are what make L.A. a city before anything else. Otherwise, it's a bunch of kind of vaguely sort of connected suburbs. But everyone, socioeconomic, race, age, gender, doesn't matter, comes together, you said, under the purple and gold flag. What responsibility and why do you feel the responsibility as though the Lakers are a public trust?
That came from my father. It's about inclusion, about everybody coming together and doing great things. It's the Lakers have that ability. It's a platform that's bigger than any one owner, any one player, any one coach. It belongs to Laker Nation. Laker Nation is, the heartbeat of the Lakers and what it stands for. They'll be around a lot longer than I'll be around. And this is my time to make sure and protect the brand and protect what our fans have come to expect from the Buss family, from this organization.
Well, Jeannie, we want to thank you so much. Thank you for being a trailblazer. Thank you for being such a strong and powerful woman and really just setting an example for the next generation as to what's possible. Because right now, we've said it, sports very much male-dominated. We want to see more women taking big roles. So thank you so much and happy International Women's Day.
Thank you, Jeannie.
And congratulations.
Thank you.
All right, guys, we are moving on here. Sticking with the NBA, though, while appearing on All Things Covered podcast, former NBA player and champion Antoine Walker said he was not a fan of the Nets trading for James Harden, saying, quote, "I'm not a James Harden guy, and it's not personal, but you can't win with that style. I don't think you can win with his style. Anytime it takes a guy 6, 7, 8 dribbles to get to where he has to go, that's a problem. It works today because it's more of a pick and roll league, so he gets away with a lot of things now, but I would not leverage my future for James Harden." Now, Harden responded to the criticism before the All-Star game.
There's pick and rolls that happen in basketball. There's isolations that happen in basketball. And I do both, so I don't really understand what that means. I just, stuff like that I don't even pay attention to, especially somebody that has no credibility.
All right, Kendrick Perkins here with us. Stephen A., are you surprised of Antoine Walker's criticism of Harden?
I don't agree with his criticism of it, but let me state for the record, I don't agree with the way that James Harden just said either about him not having any credibility. Antoine Walker played in the NBA for many years. He won a championship. He was in Boston going to conference finals. Antoine Walker was no scrub. Antoine Walker could ball. I don't agree with his opinion about James Harden. Let me be very, very clear. I think that's the James Harden in Houston he was talking about. I think if you're watching James Harden play in Brooklyn, James Harden is a top league MVP candidate. He has been nothing short of sensational. And the selflessness that he has put on display, he deserves a lot of credit for that. He doesn't deserve to be judged by how he looked in Houston, where he was dribbling the ball so much, he wasn't moving the basketball and things of that nature. That's not the James Harden that's in Brooklyn. The James Harden that's in Brooklyn has embraced the point guard responsibilities, running this offense and running this team. He deserves a boatload of credit for that. But a simple, "I disagree with Antoine Walker" would have sufficed. To sit up there and say that Antoine Walker has no credibility is false. Antoine Walker was a player in the NBA. I've watched him on TV giving his basketball analysis. He's not ignorant of or devoid of basketball knowledge or devoid of communication skills. The brother knows what he's talking about. It's just that, just in this particular situation, I just respectfully disagree with him. But Antoine Walker is not absent of credibility. And a lot of times these guys need to stop being so damn sensitive, especially against their own. Antoine Walker is a member of the NBA fraternity. He knows basketball. He knows what he's talking about. But you can respectfully disagree with him without questioning his basketball knowledge. No. I certainly wouldn't do that, and I don't think it's appropriate for James Harden to do this in this situation. Even though James Harden is balling, and he's right about what he's saying, about what he's doing, and we're right about articulating what we've seen from him in Brooklyn as opposed to what we saw from him in Houston, I totally don't agree with Antoine Walker about that. But I wouldn't question his credibility just because I don't agree with him. I would simply say respectfully, bro, I disagree with you on this point, and I would leave it at that. Antoine Walker deserves more respect than that.
I got a lot to say about this. Let me get through it quickly. First of all, I totally agree with you, Stephen A., Justin. I know this is a debate show, but Antoine Walker just giving an opinion, assessing someone's basketball game. Harden took it personally and went back at him kind of ad hominem almost, like attacking Antoine Walker himself, it sounded like. But let me just say this. There are two things here about what Antoine Walker said, and I disagree with what he said. I disagree with his basketball content. The first is James Harden almost won a championship playing the way he played. And I'm telling you, had Chris Paul not gotten hurt, I think they would have won. And even with Chris Paul, his second-best player hurt, they had no business in a Game 7 in a tough game against the Golden State Warriors with KD, Steph, Clay, Dre, Iguodala, everybody. What were they doing there? A lot of that had to do with James Harden. Now, if I ever had a beef with Harden, it was just he hasn't come up big enough in the clutch. Not that his game is not conducive to winning, right? I haven't. In that game, even without Chris Paul, if they don't go 0 for 27 from 3-1 stretch, they beat the Warriors without Chris Paul, and they go on to win a championship. I'm telling you. That's the first thing. So I disagree with Antoine Walker's basketball assessment. And I think that's a problem. Like people like Phil Jackson, greatest coach ever, right? Charles Barkley, the biggest personality in the world. Both of those guys, when the Warriors, before they'd won the championship, were talking about you can't win in that style. Too many three-point, you know, Phil Jackson, you miss threes, it leads to runouts. Charles Barkley, the jump shooting team doesn't win, when in fact, it's the only kind of team that wins nowadays because the league was changing from what they knew and were accustomed to. So that's part of it. The other thing, though, is that James Harden doesn't play the way Antoine Walker's saying he plays quite anymore. That was from a couple years ago. That was in Houston. If you watch James Harden on Brooklyn, I think it's the kind of game that anyone would say, if you want ball movement, setting up your teammates, all that. James Harden's playing the best basketball of his career and very much a style that can win a championship. So I disagree with Antoine Walker's content, and I think he's looking at Harden from a couple years ago, not today. But that doesn't mean Harden has to attack the man. The man has an opinion. It might be wrong.
Yeah, and look, to both of y'all points, y'all made some great points, and I agree with y'all. I don't agree with Antoine Walker with his statement as far as him watching the game of basketball. And I'm not questioning his knowledge, but if you've been watching James Harden, to like y'all said, he's been the best player on the damn planet. But look, I will say this. Players have to stop being so damn sensitive. This man get paid to do a job. He was asked the opinion. He gave his opinion. Whether we agree with it or not, it's his opinion. And last time I checked, Antoine Walker is credible. He do has credibility. When you look at him from a McDonald's All-American in high school, from winning the championship at Kentucky, from winning the championship with the Heat, three-time All-Star. By the way, Antoine Walker was that guy. He had his own signature shoe with Adidas. When you look at Antoine Walker on the cover of NBA Live in 1999. So Antoine Walker was that dude back in the day. So he has all the credibility to say whatever the hell he wants. Players have to stop being so damn sensitive, especially when a guy's just stating his opinion for his basketball. He wasn't attacking James Harden personally. And that's the problem that I have, is that what is credibility? Like, what do you have to do? You have to play the game. You have to be an MVP to come on here and state your opinion when somebody asks you about it in the game of basketball. This whole narrative has to change. You know, you could be a student of the game. You could not play basketball at any level and been a student of the game and could give your opinion about the game of basketball. That don't mean you don't know what the hell you're talking about just because you didn't play it at the highest level or you wasn't an all-star or you wasn't an MVP. So players need to stop with that. Second of all, Antoine has to watch the game. James Harden right now is the best player in the league. Antoine, he took his criticism back in the day. Well, he used to dribble the air out the ball. So he know it don't work because guys used to be like, Troy, you got to get off the rock. I played with Troy when he used to be firing up those dumb threes at Boston. But he had to fix that in order to fit into a system when he went down to Miami to win the championship. But with all that said and done, I just want to say this. Guys right now got to quit being so damn sensitive when somebody state their opinion about the game of basketball. You know what you're supposed to do? You're supposed to show up and show out and prove them wrong. That's it.
Listen,
all right.
Let's be very clear. Let's be very clear about one thing. James Harden has every right to disagree with Antoine Walker. The issue that we're talking about is him saying he has no credibility. How the hell are you going to say a guy that played in the league, that won a championship, that went to the playoffs as many times, that averaged over 20 points the vast majority of his career, has no credibility to talk basketball just because you disagreed with him? You can simply say, I disagree, and here's why. But unfortunately, a lot of times these guys don't do that. And here's the sad part. If you speak to a lot of these guys in the NBA, these are some brilliant brothers who can explain the game of basketball. The other day, I did the podcast with Gilbert Arenas. Let me tell y'all something. I watched Gilbert Arenas break down basketball. I'm like, damn.
Yeah,
I mean, Gilbert Arenas could break down some basketball. I mean, I would encourage everyone to listen to his podcast. He knows what he's talking about. And obviously we see all the smoke with Matt Barnes and Steven Jackson. They know what they're talking about. Just because you disagree with them doesn't mean that they don't have credibility.
Yeah, you know what?
You can simply say that you could go in and articulate and elocute, here's why I disagree with them, and show us your knowledge about the game that you're playing. Unfortunately, these guys are playing, so they don't feel they should have to explain anything to anybody, and their comeback is to be disrespectful.
Yeah, here's the bottom line.
And Antoine Walker, I just believe in this case, I don't believe he deserved that at all.
Here's the bottom line. No one's perfect. You can do a scouting report on anyone who ever lived and point out the weaknesses. No one has nothing but strengths. So sometimes that's pointed out. Harden would have been much more effective had he said something like, I don't know if, you know, like, I got close with an undermanned squad in Houston. We could have won a championship there. I didn't have my second best players going up against the best team ever, and we got to a game seven. Or he could say, have you been watching me play this year? You know, I had to play that way in the system I was in. Like, there are a million ways to go back at him at the content instead of the man.
Yeah, but Stephen A. Max, here's the problem that I have, okay? And we watch a guy like Daryl Morey, who James Harden, him are very, very close. He wouldn't dare say that Daryl Morey has no credibility, because Daryl Morey speaks out on the game of basketball every chance he gets. And I love Daryl Morey. Half of the league, GMs in the league, people that work in the scouting department, didn't play in the NBA. That means they don't have credibility. That means they don't know the game of basketball. Max, I'm sitting up here with you and Stephen A. Y'all didn't play in the NBA, but does that mean y'all don't know the game of basketball? No.
So I did play NBA 2K Live back in the day.
Yeah, but Max, but listen to what I'm saying, though. People need to stop saying that, because it really is really and truly true students of the game. People that actually watch the game of basketball and know the game of basketball, that never touched the damn basketball. And I can sit up there, and you can sit up there and be like, man, this guy knows what he's talking about. So just because you're not an all-star, just because you didn't make it to the NBA, just because you're not an MVP, doesn't mean you can't talk about the game of basketball and give an honest opinion, and give an opinion that's facts, period.
Yeah, there'd be a lot of people in trouble if that was the case. Now, let's take a look at last night's game, because we asked you, our First Take fans, who you thought was more good in the clutch. Okay, it was between Steph Curry and Damian Lillard. 52% of you said Dame time, Damian Lillard. Perk, what do you think about this? You agree?
Look, Charlie, I don't really want to get in between it. I know it's First Take. I'm out to pick a side, but I'm going to go with Dame time, because we pulled up from. But I will say this. All-Star Weekend was beautiful to watch. Dame Dollar, Steph Curry, and Giannis put on the show. But you know the most impressive thing I loved about All-Star Weekend? What happened off the court. The way that the NBA celebrated HBCU in the heart of HBCU, and what they did to donate so much money back, and people standing on the front line in the NBA to give back donations. That was the most beautiful part about the whole, the whole All-Star Weekend. But I will say, Team LeBron was something special to watch.
The favorite part for me was watching Dame and Steph Curry shooting the threes from half court. I loved it. One was from 48 feet. Another was from 50 feet. I mean, my Lord. So I love that. The other thing, again, like you pointed out, the HBCUs, historically black colleges and universities, getting the attention they so richly deserve, and obviously some additional revenue as well, which they definitely deserve. So I'm definitely happy about that. And I give credit to LeBron and CP3 and all the brothers out there for being a part of it, and the NBA for making it happen.
Yeah.
Hey, Max. Max, Stephen A. always talking about somebody pulling up for threes and stuff. Next All-Star weekend, let's you and I have a three-point shooting contest. Since you always want to talk about what somebody pulling up from and you think you can shoot the rock.
On the video game, no doubt.
Three-point shooting contest.
No doubt on the video game. The only thing is I'm going to go into GM mode and simulate
the game. I can break both of my wrists and shoot a jumper better than Kendrick Perkins. I ain't worried about that. You watch your mouth, man. Who are you, Stone?
Uh-oh.
You ain't Stone. You understand?
Yeah,
saying?
If it was Stone, you better back off.
We're about to have an All-Star game of our own here on First Take, guys.
You understand?
Stone
right,
walks
it's been
you got
fun,
it,
guys.
Stone.
I'm Charlie Arnold with Stephen A. We have Kendrick Perkins, Max Kellerman. Everyone, thanks so much. It's International Women's Day. Tell a woman you appreciate them. We'll see you later.
Ooh, that-